Can't call him an alcoholic. So I'm going to carry a little bit then and then hand it back to Ralph. Where I left you was, better get some help and you better get it now. I told my brother to take me to my mom and dad's house. I did not live in a house, I lived in a spot. We don't have phones in the spot. And I called a guy who was my best drinking and using buddy from college. And he is a doctor today. And he's a very, very, very wealthy and powerful man. He could drink me under the table. And this is something I learned. Everybody ain't got what I got. And it was he and I who we sold weed, thousands of Quaaludes. Hey, you know, that's a funny thing. I always say, I never met a drug I didn't like, but I didn't like that one. I took one of them things one night. I had a shirt and tie on. I was going to a dance. And I woke up with that shirt and tie on and hadn't been no place. And I said, hey, anything that interferes with my drinking, I ain't doing it, right? And we started, that's when I first started doing powder. And I used to wear a bottle around my neck with a little gold spoon. I used to wear a shirt with a Coca-Cola emblem that said, enjoy cocaine. And I wore that in public proudly. My family was so proud. And that's how I started with that. But I called my boy, and I said, Rich, this your boy, man. I need some help. His response to me, the day he got accepted into medical school, he had a joint in his hand, and he had a beer in front of him. And he had the letter saying, you are accepted into medical school at Wright State University. And he looked at me, put the joint out, and he said, I ain't going to be able to do this and do that. And he ain't never picked it back up. And this was a cat who used to drive around with me sleeping in the car, and he's still rolling because he ain't got what I got. And he said, pack a bag, stay by the phone. I got you. And he's not a member of this fellowship. When I get a call, you know what I tell them, don't you? Pack a bag, stay by the phone, I got you. And for that, I am responsible. He called me back and told me he got me in a place in Xenia, Ohio. I went to school at Miami of Ohio, which is in Oxford, about 4 hours from where I live. And he got me in a place in Xenia, which is about 3.5 hours from where I live, down by, and that's where he was. He was from Cincinnati. And so the next morning, my brother and his wife in the front seat, I'm in the back seat, and we're speeding down I-75. I got a case of Genesee beer with me in the back seat. Now listen, my mother had to take me, I don't tell this too often, my mother had to take me to J.C. Penney's and buy me clothes to go to treatment. I worked at Ford Motor Company. I made enough money to take care of three families and didn't have a dime. My father, I went to ask my father in the last couple years of using to borrow some money. My father sat me down at the kitchen table, took a pen and paper, and he said, okay, let's see what you got and I'll see what I can do. So I told him what, I ran through everything. He's holding his pen. He still ain't wrote nothing down. My father laid that pen on the kitchen table, looked at me, and he said, boy, you ain't worth a quarter. And that was literally and figuratively. My father looked me in the eye, and he said, boy, you ain't worth a quarter. But I got a case of Genesee beer. I didn't know too much about treatment, but I had figured out on my own they probably wasn't serving no liquor down there. So as we speed down I-75, I get three or four of them, chug three or four of them Jennies, And here's the thought that came to me. If you knew, stay with me. You know, I just may have overreacted here. It ain't that damn bad. I'll start my comeback tomorrow, right? Now, what I didn't know is my dad must have knew something about alcoholism because he told my brother and his wife, I give you $100, you don't bring that tramp back here. This is a true story. So I told my brother, turn the car around. My brother looked at me and said, you got $200? I said, I ain't got $2. He said, then your ass going to treatment. And so off to treatment I went. I got to Green Memorial Hospital. I was so drunk. Well, I'll put it to you like this. They took me to Richard's house, and rang the doorbell, and I fell in the bushes. And Richard's wife, Bobby, opened the door, and my brother and his wife is pulling me out of the bushes. And she looked at me, and she said, oh, Kent. Because Bobby knew me when I wasn't like that. This thing is progressive. Ralph said, you know, had a good time. Man, I went to 1,000 concerts. I did, I say, you know, I had fun, right? But I also learned something else in here. That's just me saying that. I said it in a meeting one time. I had fun because I heard somebody else say it and they got pats on the back down at the club for saying it. I made the mistake of going to a real meeting and saying that. And there was a guy, his name was Jim Redmond. He was a guy who got sober in the 1940s where I was born, where I'm from. That's where AA started. So there were a lot of guys from the 40s when I got sober. And Jim Redmond said, excuse me? Now here's what upset me about that. It wasn't his turn to share. He was sitting way in the back. He said, let me ask you a question, Big Shot. If we bought your mother, your father, the girl you live with, your employer, your neighbors, your co-workers, and your creditors in here, and told them, hey, Ken had a really good time drinking and using. What kind of time did you guys have? What do you think they'd say? I said, I don't really want to have that meeting. Right? So I got to kind of remember the truth. And I spent 35 days in a 28-day program. That'll tell you how I do treatment. And I went to my first meeting. We had AA, CA, and NA come in there and have meetings. It was one of them hospital treatment centers from the old days. And man, I loved the meetings. I always felt better after the meetings, right? No matter how messed up my head was. And I had been drunk and high for a long time. My first sponsor used to point at me at meetings and say it took him a year to detox. And it did. I loved the meetings. I heard people. This is where identification started to happen for me. I heard people say out loud things that I could not put into words, that I knew that you couldn't know if you didn't have it. I heard stories in AA Stephen King couldn't make up, right? But I saw that what Ralph said was true. The people that were saying it weren't the people that they were describing doing it. And I saw that. I saw people happy. I saw people laughing. We talked about it in here, the energy in the room, the lights in the eyes. I saw all that. It is very attractive. I was attracted to the fellowship. I did not really understand. I had never been here before. My last day, I had a counselor. His name was Jim D. And he was 15 years sober, so he's 46 years sober. Now he lives in Florida. And Jim D looked at me, and he said, I'm going to tell you something, Kent. He said, you are not the potential, you are the actual. The book talks about people like you. And he said, unless you get what this has to offer, you're going to die. He said, if you don't go to a meeting when you go home tonight, he said, you're done. And I left, I went home, I went to a meeting at home, I rode around the block about 5 times, I was scared to go in there, and when I walked into the meeting, it was Friday Night Venice, which became my home group. there was a man, his name was Chester. Chester was a friend of my father. And I walked to the door and I came in and Chester shook my hand. And he said, "I don't know about nobody else, son," he said, "but I've been waiting for you." And I went to I moved back in my mom and dad's house because I didn't have a safe place to stay. I went to 3 meetings a day. I worked midnights. So I got off in the morning. I went down to the morning meeting at the club. I came home, took a shower. Then I would go to a noon or 1 o'clock meeting. I would leave there, come home, eat. Then my dad would go to work. I would sit with my mom until the evening. My brother would come over there. Then I'd go to a meeting at 8 o'clock. I did that every day, Monday through Friday, and on Saturdays and Sundays, I went to 4 or 5 meetings. I quit counting at 200, and I was nowhere near 3 months in here. I went to meetings like crazy, and I had the nerve when I was new to say I didn't get nothing out of them meetings, but I got a whole lot out of them meetings. But I wasn't getting better. When I was 60 days sober, I picked up a T-bar at work and tried to kill a supervisor. That's what I look like. 60 days sober, 200 meetings, no sponsor, no book, no steps, no home group, no nothing. There was an old timer in my town, Mr. Willie Witherspoon. Mr. Willie walked up to me after a meeting one day and said, "Son, sitting in a chicken coop don't make you no chicken." He used to say stuff to me like that all the time. Leave me alone, right? And a guy saw me about to do it. I was going to hit this guy in the back of his head. A guy came and snatched it out of my hand because he saw what I was doing. And I sponsor that guy today. He's 27 years sober. And he looked at me and he said, "Man, you better do something because you're going to hurt somebody." And I'm going to all these meetings, and 3 months, I couldn't take it no more. I drove down to a bar called Daly's Pub in downtown Sandusky. I parked behind there, and I sat in the car, and I looked at the back door of Daly's Pub is green, Irish green, and I looked at that green door. And I wanted, and I knew, let me tell y'all something, I'm a smoker. I knew that if I go in that green door, it's on. I'm drinking and I'm smoking. That's what I do. I did not sit there and lie to myself. And I didn't want to. I've been to all these meetings, and I didn't want to. But I knew I was going to. I had to have some relief. And my mother was dying of cancer. I mean, I had a lot of stuff still. I was on reporting probation till I was 3 years sober. I was thousands of dollars in debt. I said my first prayer. I hadn't said a prayer in AA. I had no sponsor. I sat in the car and I said a prayer, and this is what it was: "God, what am I doing wrong? I'm thinking, what am I, some kind of freak? I go to these meetings every day, and I want to use so bad, I'm vibrating." And I got an immediate answer: "What are you doing right? If you go to that many meetings, you hear it every day, don't you? Get a sponsor, get in a book, work the steps. Get a home group, get a commitment, help others." I didn't do none of that. I treated AA like a cigarette smoking, donut dunking coffee clutch. And instead of going into Daly's Pub, I turned the key in that car and I drove 25 miles to Lorain, Ohio, because there were 4 guys in my home group who got sober between 1944 and 1946. And they sat me down and they said, "There's a man in Lorain, Ohio, and he specializes in guys like you. And you need to go ask him to help you." And his name was Bill Finley. Ralph met him. And in Cleveland, they called Bill the Messiah. And He ran around with a guy named Kenny Bombalicki. Ralph knew Kenny. Both of them died over 50 years sober. And I was driving there. Bill's home group was on Thursday night. It was the Compass group. It was in a gymnasium, and there were 700 people every Thursday night, and he sat in the back and directed traffic. And I walked into that gymnasium, and I said, the first one of them two I see, I'm going to ask to help me. I'm desperate. And when I walked in the door, the two of them were sitting side by side, looking at me and Kenny pulled his toothpick out, and he's doing like this at Bill. Everybody knew me. If you go to that many meetings, people know you. None of them liked me, but they knew me. And I walked up to the two of them, and I said, would you help me? Kenny lived in Cleveland. Bill lived in Lorain. So, like, Lorain is in between Sandusky and Cleveland. So it's 25 miles, and then another 25, I'm in Cleveland. Kenny told Bill, well, you're closer to him than I am. So you take the worst of it, and then send him to Cleveland, and we'll clean up the rest of it. And that's how I ended up with Bill and Kenny. And they're gone now. Sponsored thousands of people. If you go into that area and you mention their names, people will go through the roof. I was very, very blessed. Bill told me we'll take you through the steps of this deal. As outlined in the book, he said, Ken, I want you to bury yourself knee deep. He said, no, scratch that. He said, I want you to bury yourself shoulder deep in this thing so you can't teeter and fall. And I've been shoulder deep in here from then to now. So I told you how to surrender. It started in the parking lot of the pump. Then a couple hundred meetings, probably about 300 meetings, right, just attracted to the fellowship, staying close. And then reaching a point where I had to have more. The obsession was there. And from that day to this, I have stayed shoulder deep. There's a lot of other things that happened which have come out later. So at this point, I'm going to turn it back to Ralph. And when you talk about surrender, because I love the word concession. We had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. How did I know I was alcoholic? Because of y'all, because of the stories that you told, that you can't identify with if you ain't got it. You can't. Go tell your story at the Kiwanis Club and see if you get out of there without getting locked up, right? I knew that I got what you got, right? And then I realized if I got what you got, I got to do what you do. Recovery is not intellectual, it's experiential. It's not about, as Ralph said, knowledge and intellect. It is about the application of principles. And my sponsor, Bill, told me, I'm going to train your feet to move against your head. And he did. Ralph?
I got so caught up in listening to Kent, you know. There's a couple of things. He's talking about train your feet against your head. And it's an anatomical facts about this deal that we have, especially if it's anybody that's new. Kent talked about foot training. One of the earliest things I did too was train my ears. I didn't know I was training my ears, but when you go to that many meetings, that's one of the first things that happens. Your ears get trained. I came in 1985 for 89 days with untrained ears, listening for the differences. Coming in late, leaving early. 1985, when I came in here, you know, admitting I was alcoholic, not conceding it. I admitted it because it's the price of admission to go stand at that podium and talk. At 9604 South Figueroa, which was my home group, you had to identify as alcoholic in order to share at a meeting. I like sharing. I like talking. I like hearing myself. I like talking to topic meetings where I don't know nothing about the topic. You know. And so that's the price of admission. And I liked, but the other part, you know, without being flippant about it is, I liked what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. In 85, I didn't quite like it like I did when I came to stay in 86. But my sponsor, who is Bob B. out of St. Paul, Minnesota, he talks about something that I also had when I came to stay, and that is an instant affinity for Alcoholics Anonymous. I found you welcoming. I found you interesting. Just like Kent, Ronnie, me, our stories and my brother, Red, I was an avid reader. I love stories. I love escaping in stories. You can't find better stories than our stories. You know, so I found you. And I still find you fascinating to me. In my 36 years here, it has not been hard for me to be a member. Life has presented me with challenges, but I've never wavered on my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous, never. That has not been hard for me, you know. But in 85, I came and I stayed 89 days. And I would leave early. I would come late. I would go where my brothers were. I was the first one to come around. And my brothers were still smoking weed. And they were smoking. I wouldn't be around when they were hitting the horn. But they would be drinking Michelobes and smoking weed. And I remember rolling up some weed and going to my aftercare program and telling the counselor, I sat with my brothers getting high, and I didn't get high. I'm getting stronger. I didn't know I was getting closer, right? You know, and so on day 89, I'm out of the club with my older brother's ex-girl. She and I have been tight. We were just real good. We were just real good friends. And she didn't understand the gravity of this situation. She knew I had gone into this program. She knew I was smoked out. She, just like me when I first came, when people talked about entire abstinence and we don't do nothing, when I went in the care unit and the girl told me, I said, with nothing. I said, oh, you got the wrong person. I'm just here because of the, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to smoke weed all my life. You know, but when I got in there, I became sold on the idea. Because one thing that's powerful, and when we get to the seventh step, it'll talk about God remove all our defects except for the ones that stand in the way of my use. There are sometimes the defects can be useful. One of my defects, which was useful for me, is that need to be accepted and that need for approval. So when I go up in a program, I buy in. You know, I've always exceeded when I go into some place. You know, I'm a high achiever. I'm gonna get an A in AA. So you know, I go in and so. I really, and my life was coming back, and I liked it. But I'm at this club this particular night, not thinking I'm going to get loaded again, because I'm thanks for the information. I now know that it's the first one. But this girl got up, and she was dancing with a guy, and I was sitting at the table, and she left her Long Island with me. And I'm looking at the Long Island, and it's looking at me, and you know, there's some places in the book. Sometimes it's good because it says suddenly we realize God is doing for us. But sometimes when you see that suddenly and it's in italics, dun, 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 it's like the music, you know, it's like music in those movies. Suddenly the thought came. I was like, and I didn't even think about it. I just sipped that Long Island. Then I drank that Long Island. Then I put my hand out, I told Deb, take me home. You know, and I went around the corner, and I was out 11 months, you guys, and I got a real understanding of my condition. The book talked about it's worth a bad case of the jitters. It really ain't contemplating when you're drinking and smoking. Jitters is way too mild a term for what happened to me, you know. But when I came back in October of 1986, I understood fully. I'm an alcoholic. The reason I identify as an alcoholic, I never go in denial about cocaine or the pipe or the rest, but denial waits on me around my alcoholism, you know? And so that's the reason why anytime I identify, I identify there because that's the one that that has ambushed me. It ambushed me in the past. And, you know, and I fell prey to a couple of things, you know, at that time. The delusion that, okay, now that I'm sober, I can just sell dope. I know ain't nobody else in here like that. You know, now that I'm sober, I can say, monkey don't sell bananas. You know? So, but that's, you know, I fell victim to that idea. So anyway, so I came back in 86, and this idea of concession, I had a couple of problems really wrapping my head around our first step, you guys. One was that whole alcohol thing, because when you smoke so tough, it obscures how bad, and I like drinking, trust me, and it has its way with me. When I start drinking, I can't stop, you know, it does what it does, but when you smoking, it obscures it, right? So I have one problem. Another reason I had a problem with that conceding to my animal self is because I'm the kind of guy, when I make up my mind, I make up my mind. In the eighth grade, you know, because I'm the shy guy, I'm scared of girls, but I had this crush on this girl, and I went to my first house party, and at this house party, I'm the square guy, and I gotta be cool. So in order to be cool at this house party, I need to be smoking a cigarette. So I proceed to smoke this cigarette at this age. I ain't never smoked a cigarette. I'm coughing, it get in my eyes are tearing up, ain't nothing cool about me. and I said, okay. And I'm overly sensitive to the way I look, defects that help me, right? I'm not fooling with cigarettes again. Never smoked another cigarette. 12th grade, summer after high school, go out to the beach with my first cousin. We drink a Slitz malt liquor Bull. I go two or three pulls in that Bull, throw up. Two or three pulls. Some of y'all are like, wait a minute, I drink beer. Kemp was talking about drinking beer. I never drank another beer in my life. Never. Another signal. When I make up my mind, I make up my mind. Exhibit C. Smoke some angel dust. PCP for you uninitiated. In 1973, in this apartment of mine. Smoked on it for a period of over a couple of weeks, maybe two or three times. Kent talked about one of the pills. He was like, hey, that dust, I'm in this out-of-body experience. I didn't need a 12-step program. I didn't need nothing. I'm done. I'm not touching this again. And so those things, those three things, man, convinced me that when I make up my mind, you know, I make up my mind. We were playing bullshit one night. That's a drinking game, you know, and we playing bullshit, and you mixing drinks. I threw up all over the place, to me, because of drinking this vodka. I said, I don't drink vodka no more. So I didn't drink vodka no more. Now, mind you, all those things that I gave up smoking cigarettes. I didn't like smoking cigarettes. I gave up drinking beer, but I like drinking wine. I like drinking tequila. I like drinking Southern Comfort. I gave up vodka, but I'm drinking everything else I'm drinking. You know, so I connected these dots wrong. And I told myself, I'm the kind of guy that when I say I'm done, I'm done. So those things, you guys, for me, they were really crippling along the way of conceding the minimal self. So what ended up happening, Ralph? Well, what ended up happening was my experience, you know, and then I started coupling it with you guys. I made it to you guys. You know, my sponsor always talks about life is lived forward and understood backwards. And most of the time, for most of us, when we have our how dark it is before the dawn day, every one of us has that day, the day before. Tarek talked about, you know, God showing up in the form of police, you know. Well, Grace found me the night of October 10th of 1986, dressed like two gangbangers with sagging pants. And they asked me to serve them a 50. And I served them, and I asked for the money, and they grabbed their crotch, and they walked away and said, here's your 50, and just walked away. I said, that's the weakest jack move ever. You know, they didn't sock me, didn't pull a pistol on me. You know, I'm about that big at that time. I'm on the corner. I'm serving for this youngster that let me be in the neighborhood and serve him, right? And they walked away. I did what I do in a situation like that. I'm mad. I mean, I got to go think this one, you know, I'm pissed off. Let me go. And so I think to myself, let me go over to this spot and let me smoke on this, the rest of this youngster's dope while I ponder what just happened. When the dope is gone the morning of October the 11th, I realized that was not too wise a decision. And the morning of October the 11th of 1986 found me dodging a black truck five blocks back to my mom's house. And through a series of events, I used to think, you know, I told a lie. Mom, if you let me in the house, I promised to go up in the program where my brother Ron was. But it turned out, as I thought about it, years later, after I've been telling the story, I didn't lie. It's amazing. God will say stuff through your mouth that you don't really, you think you're saying it. Mama, if you let me in the house, I promise to go where Ronnie is. Mama wouldn't accept that on face value, so we had to find the yellow pages, call Harbor Light, get Ronnie on the phone. Ronnie gets excited. Ronnie, tell Mom they got a bed for me. They can have a bed. And the miracle, you guys, is 2 days later, I followed through. So I thought I was lying. But I told my mom, if you let me in the house, she let me in the house. I promised to go in the program. I went in the program. And I've been with you ever since. And in my early days, you know, Leslie knows, Sid knows. I believe Miles is probably know, because you can't be in Los Angeles and not know my home group. It's in the 9604 South Figueroa. And I found the welcoming hand of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I'm scary. I'm awkward. I'm socially awkward. I don't know what this new thing is, but I'm so excited. I'm like, Kent, I couldn't wait to go to meetings. You know, when you're around for a while, and there's a lot of people in here who've already signed on the dotted line, you know, when we go to a retreat, these are the people who've decided, I'm going to do what you do. But there are usually in our meetings several people. There are always people who haven't decided that they want to get down with us. And so that's why I stay in my mind. I keep it in front of me. My experience is not the experience. So a lot of times when I've been doing this for a while, I discount the power of our fellowship. And I don't mean to, but I'll say meetings don't keep you sober. Okay. And if I leave it, stand alone, I'll be telling some new people, you really ain't gotta, you know. For me, I fell in love with the fellowship before I fell in love with the program. You know, and a lot of times, you know, for me, man, I was going, because I am an alcoholic, but I smoke dope. What does that mean when you say that, Ralph? That means I go in motels for 3 and 4 and 5 days at a time. That means I go and find the fellowship I crave and I do marathon meetings before getting here. You know, I sit with you guys. I was already familiar with going to rooms like this with people like you. I was already familiar with living one day at a time. You know, that shit wasn't none of that new to me. You know, it's just that the places I was at, they didn't say keep coming back. You run out of money. Get your goat smelling ass up out of here. You know, so this already came easy for me. And for a guy like me, man, for a guy like me, I'm 33. I don't have a job yet. I got a big hole in my resume. I don't know when, and they ain't trusting me yet. I don't know where my little girl is enrolling to. I am not back up in the house. I'm not back on my feet. I don't have sea legs. I'm a guy who had dreams and goals and ambitions. And I just, and my self-esteem is there. And I would go to these meetings, man, and you guys would lift me up. Bill Wilson talks about he would feel amazingly lifted when he would go to these meetings. He says, sometimes he was plagued, you know, by waves of depression, and he would find himself remarkably set on his feet. You know, where do we find that? You ain't got to go look it if you go to meetings. My very life as an ex-problem drinker depends on, and if my life depends on, I like to not have to go look it. You know, and so I was in there, man. I was in there, man. I was going to those early meetings and the kindness of strangers. You know, my friend Josie always talks about that. You guys, at 96, you know, it's in South Central LA, and they had a meeting. Sometime they would go to the steakhouse after the meeting, and I'd want to go, but I don't want to go. They might invite me to go, And I'm you know, and nah, man, I'm not hungry. My stomach is rumbling, but I'm scared. You know, I'm scared that I don't know how to act. I'm socially awkward and I don't know all these people yet. And then what are they gonna think about me? And they're gonna be looking down on me. And the big question is gonna come up at the end of the night that I'm really scared about. The check is gonna come around. And you're gonna know I don't have no money. And at my home group, I hear a lot of tales about Alcoholics Anonymous now. I hear it from a lot of people when I was new, especially in my era. When I was new, they was tough, you know, shut up. The Alcoholics Anonymous that I know, the men and women that raised me, Sid knows, and we talked about some of them today. Somebody would say, my guy in my home group, Roy, Malcolm, and you know, Big B, or some of those guys, and they pulled me to the side before we go to the steakhouse. And they said, Ralph, get whatever you want, don't worry about it. I got you. And Alcoholics Anonymous has said that to me for 36 years, I got you. And they left me my dignity. Didn't front me off in front of everybody. Didn't wait till the check came, hey Ralph, okay, you know, cause that's me. You know, I'm so self-conscious. And when I'm new, I'm so afraid. Yeah, everybody know we broke. But when you knew, you don't know everybody. Know. When you knew, you be so into yourself. And you be ashamed of stuff that everybody that's come through the rooms, Alcoholics Anonymous, has been there. They've done it. But you don't know that because you haven't been there. So you do stupid stuff. You say to yourself. You stay to yourself. And that's why we need a sponsor. That's why we get a home group. Because I don't know the lay of the land. This is brand new. I don't know altruistic. I come from tit for tat. I come from you do something for me, I do something for you. You know, that's where I come from. I don't know nothing about this. So this business of sponsorship was big, and they talked about it. And like I say, this guy that I was looking at, he would come over where you were. I keep referring. See, it is from my home group. So she know Bob Hunt. You knew my first sponsor. The new people know the old people. The old people don't always know all the new people. But the new people, we know the new people. And we know though, and Bob Hunt was a man that just had an air, and he'd be up at the front. And so I'm at a meeting. I'm looking at him. I'm at a meeting, you guys. And I know I want to get a sponsor, but I don't have nothing to bring. Who want to fool with me? I don't have nothing to offer nobody. And I'm looking at this guy. I'm at a meeting, and it's a Saturday night. I don't know who spoke that night. And they had a break before the speaker, and they had a coffee break. And this guy came down, Bob Hunt, and he saw me sitting about right there. And I had this newcomer thing working. I didn't want to go up and get coffee because I might stumble and everybody will laugh at me. And at the same time I'm thinking everybody's looking at me, I'm sitting there feeling like I'm all alone in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm feeling like an outsider. And this dude came up to me at the break and shook my hand. He stuck his hand out. I said, what's your name, brother? And I told him. He said, my name is Bob. I don't know who spoke at the meeting that night. And at the end of the meeting, he said, after a moment of silence for the alcoholic who still suffers, I want my new friend, Ralph. And somebody knew my name in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys. And so he's put me in there. I started rolling with him. He had 10 years and he had a boy, Latee, and they both had 10 years. And Latee had been in the nut house and my sponsor had been in the nut house. And I found that very exciting and attractive. I'm a schoolboy, I'm a square guy. I'm from Watts, I'm from a tough town, but I'm not a tough guy. You know, I'm a square guy. And these guys had stories and adventures. And you know, I'd be in the back seat and they'd be talking about, yeah, we doing the Thorazine shuffle with the Miller reel twist. And I'd be like, ooh, what is that? You know, and they be sharing stories about early recovery, and then you know, and I'm hungry. I'm like when I'm green in the dope game. When I'm green in the dope game, I'm watching. You know, what you put it on the album cover, you cut it up like this. You know, I learned how to do a triple beam. I learned how to, you know, way dope. I learned how to look at it by sight. I would challenge you. You put it on the beam, I'm going to put it in the back. Let's see who come close. You know, I learned it. I'm a student of my craft. And so I got excited about recovery like that, right? These guys made it excited. And so I'm rolling, but I still don't have a sponsor. And I'm scared because I can't take a rejection, you guys. I just can't take it. Women, you guys are so much, even sober, you guys are so much stronger than men. Men are boys, you know, we be tripping. Yeah, we let the testosterone be coming out, but we be scared of shit. I be scared, you know. I know the rest of y'all are real men. You know, I be scared as hell. I be scared, you know. And so, you know, I can't roll up on Bob because he might, really? Dude, come on now. I'm Bob Hunt. And so anyway, we rolling one day. And I, check this out. This is how I got my first sponsor. We rolling. And I said, so Bob, I said, you know I consider you my sponsor, right? He can't say no to that, right? I'm not asking. You know I consider you my sponsor. And of course, as we know, he had been considering, he just kind of looked to the side at me and said, let's do this, brother. And I started on that road with Bob Hunt, man. And those early days of recovery, they were still as exciting to me. You know, I got to have confession, you guys. We often say, you guys sponsor and you work with people, and I know you are the enthusiasts. So people in here probably know about that gift of desperation. And I got a confession to make. I got here very desperate. I don't try to manufacture. I have not had that desperation in many years. You know, what has held me over these last years has not been desperation, inspiration. Inspiration. To be honest, I ain't had a glass to my lips and a pipe to my mouth and a J in my hand in a very long time. Sometimes it feels like when I tell my story, it feels like a story about another guy. When Don P was alive, I remember stepping to Don one time. I said, Don, when I talk, it feels like I'm telling a story about somebody else sometime. Am I tripping? He said, Ralph, that's because you are. That guy died. Now, he can be resurrected. You let up on this spiritual program. He said, but that guy died. That's another guy. You know, and so, and be where you are. You know, when you hear some people like us sitting up here and I want to be where they are, be where you are. You know, be where you are. I can't tell you when that evolved for me, but I get inspired. You know, when that guy right there, I get inspired when I listen to him. You know, I'm out somewhere and I'm in the street and I see Dylan and I see Brent and these guys, they step to me and I get inspired. I get inspired. When me and Les rolled up and we saw Philippe standing at the front, I get inspired. You guys, the juice is still there for me. You know, if you knew and you think to yourself, I wonder at 30 something years, does it get mundane? Does it get dull? Does it get boring? Does it get the same? Some days you may. Well, how do you stop it? Stay in the middle. Stay in the goddamn middle. You know, stay in the goddamn middle. And because for me, you know, I got a full life, you know. And the other thing is to be honest, I'm sitting up here throwing some stuff out as if I got some advice for you. I don't know. I'm built that way. I can't tell you why it is. But the people I gravitate to, I don't think we put it in ourselves. But it is, I think when you taste and you touch, when grace touches you, you got to tell somebody. You got to tell somebody. You know, it's a component of doing this thing for real. It's not something you hold. It's not like you want to. You got to tell somebody. It's what it is we do. It's our currency. It's our charge. You know, one drunk sharing with another. It's it ain't hard. It seemed like it sometimes. You know, sometimes, to be honest, you guys, yeah, feel like, damn, I gotta go out here again. You know, we in the middle of some stuff right now, and I feel like that a lot. But I've been doing this long enough that I'm no longer, I don't scare myself about my initial feelings prior to putting my feet in motion. It's a whole lot of times I don't feel like putting them in motion. But when I put them in motion, oh my God. So now I've learned that. I learned. T calls me, oh, Tarek, I want to talk for a minute. And then he lights me up. So I don't trip off myself now. I really don't, you know. And in sponsorship, that happens a lot for me. You know, that I, you know, you take a talk, and you ain't feeling it right then. Oh, but the moment you get with your people and you realize. So a lot of times when we come out, you guys are thinking, oh, they're coming to bring a message. Sometimes I need to hear, I get reminded the grace of God and the blessing and the gift of this deal when I hear myself. When I get with you, I'm at my very best. It brings out the best in me. We're not going to hold you guys no longer tonight because we got a full weekend in front of us, you know. So we're gonna close it tomorrow, though. This business of, okay, you guys, you told us how you conceded. You told us about that ass whooping. You told us about what drove you to us. What is it that, and how is it that you made the transition from ass whooped to where you are now? We don't come back. We got a cliffhanger for you. Come back tomorrow.